This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Welcome to a Joycast from Joy 94.9. Visit joy.org.au to find out more about our Joycasts.
You're on Joy 94.9 and you're with Colin Armstrong on Aesthetica. And this afternoon, I'm very, very pleased and honoured to have two fabulous people. I'm talking to them in New York City, and just to preempt our interview, it was recorded at 9 a.m. This morning, and we are in 5 p.m. New York time. I would like just to give a brief introduction. I'm talking to Amy Touchette, who is a fine arts photographer. She's based in New York City. Her photographs explore social themes that focus on connections and aim to contribute to a historical documentation. A few weeks ago, she actually had the launch of an amazing book about the world-famous Bob, and it was called Shoot the Arrow. Joining Amy in New York this morning is the world-famous Bob. Bob is known for her over-the-top blonde bombshell image and incredible ability to mix martinis with her cleavage. I'd like you to welcome both the world-famous Bob and Amy Touchette to Aesthetica on Joy 94.9. Welcome.
Hi, thanks so much for having us. Good morning, Australia.
Great to have you both on the air. Can I start with perhaps you first, Amy? Amy, where did the concept or the ideas for Shoot the Arrow come from?
Well, I ended up going to a burlesque show kind of on a whim one night, and I arrived late, so I had to, my spot was by the wings of the stage, and from there I could see the burlesque dancers as they faced out to the audience, you know, have these expressions of entertainment and happiness and excitement, and then when they turn their backs to the audience, their expressions fell to, you know, the fact that they were working. And it just got me thinking about all that they were managing at that one time. And then the world famous Bob came on stage, and of course, you don't miss her. So I got very inspired by who she was and who she was projecting, her image, and just, you know, she's very visual and an ideal subject for photography. And being a photographer at the time, you know, those things really jump out at me. So I was very inspired.
And with the title Shoot the Arrow, can I ask the idea of that as well? Because
Yes, that's from a film called Paris is Burning.
Ah, yes.
And it's a wonderful documentary. And at the end of the documentary, one of the drag queens is taking off her makeup, and she says, "You know, I'm summarizing, but basically, you know, life is really hard, and you try to do the best you can. And if you shoot an arrow and it goes real high, then hooray for you. But I think it's really best to just enjoy it. And if one person remembers your name, then you know you've had a good life." And it got me thinking about this phrase, shoot the arrow, and I like how it's present tense and how, you know, the notion of where the arrow is going isn't integral into that phrase. So it's very much about a journey and not about the end. And, you know, just this notion that we're all, you know, doing the best we can, living this life, and I just thought it was poetic and pretty, you know, and kind of gorgeous and open-ended. So I wanted something to accompany the photos that sort of spoke to the dreams and hardships of being alive and managing everything.
No, that's, yes. Now, your work is amazing. You're a very talented photographer and have really enjoyed looking at that work.
I have to admit, I did go looking at your Instagram account, and I get the feeling that you've got a really great sense of community, especially around the Brooklyn area, and I just love those photos of people in Brooklyn. Would I be right in saying that that is one of your themes, is community?
Very, very, very much so. In fact, I became a photographer because I felt disconnected from people, and I wanted to learn how to make people feel comfortable. And I thought, you know, trying to photograph someone, confronting someone with their own image, it's really intense and really deep. And I was a painter before I was a photographer, and even though I loved painting, it was so beautiful to, you know, be focusing on the minutiae of painting. It was also very lonely for me, and, you know, it's just you and your turpentine, and I longed to be outside, and, you know, I that led me to photography, and it really was about the fact that, you know, especially living in New York City, it's just like character after character. You don't have to make it up. And you know, it's a really wonderful excuse, really, to get to know people. And I find it really fulfilling. And I feel very impassioned by photography pretty consistently. So, yeah, those Instagram photos, I make those, you know, daily. I mean, those are all with my iPhone, so they're very off the cuff. Pretty much stolen moments. I'm, you know, on the way to the grocery store, or, you know, doing something where I'm not photographing seriously. Those are really just sketches, and my neighborhood's incredibly inspiring. So a lot of those photographs end up taking place here.
I think, too, they're also more real that way, aren't they? Where they're just like spur of the moment photographs that really encapsulate what's happening just now.
Yeah, that's a really big thing for me. I mean, I love fiction, and I love conceptual photography. But for me, it's, you know, it's like I was saying earlier, you don't have to make it up. And truth is stranger than fiction. It is. And I'm so caught up in that notion. And so, you know, for me, to have these photographs be real moments are what it's all about.
And there's a real intimacy in some of your photography, and there's one photo that I was very taken with in Shoot the Arrow, and I think it's called At the End of the Day, and the world famous Bob is in the bathtub, and the look on Bob's face, and I could be wrong, but I think she was about to hit you.
No, you're totally wrong.
Am I? The look on your face was so intense.
Amy didn't have, Amy never pushed the boundaries that we set together. She was always really respectful. And that look on my face is literally how tired I was after entertaining people all night. It's just that complete, no matter what's happening in your life, whether your, you know, loved one is sick or you've just lost a loved one. You know, if somebody dies and you have a show the next day, you really... There are times when you can't cancel as an entertainer. You really have to go there. So sometimes the removal of the mask shows a face that is truly that intense. You know, sometimes that's on the other side of the drag queen in the club hugging you.
And I was, and what that was a segue into talking to the world famous Bob, because I was just about to say I was going to ask you to join us in the conversation. To the world-famous Bob, we're on actually Joy 94.9, and you're with Colin Armstrong on Aesthetica. And just to set the mood, we're actually talking to Amy Touchette and the world-famous Bob in New York City. Now, can I call you Bob? Because tell me, you're so beautiful when I look at your photos, and as a burlesque dancer, how did it all begin for you, Bob?
How did everything begin?
Yeah, well, I've actually read on online where earlier in your career you wanted to be a drag queen, and yeah. There was some gender identity, and there's some amazing pictures on some clips that I've been able to look at. And so can you just, and particularly, you know, share any of that with us this morning?
Of course, I would love to.
Thank you.
I grew up in California. I was a child on a really big farm, so I lived in a very isolated rural environment, and I didn't have any neighbors or siblings, so I basically had this super overactive imagination, and as a small child, I dreamt of stardom. I would line up my stuffed animals and play interview and pretend they were the press, and I had daydreams of being discovered at the local mall So I would overdress when me and my family went out on outings, hoping to catch a producer's eye.
Right.
And these fantasies from my childhood of stardom were not fed or encouraged by my family. I really don't know where they came from. I think for me, it seemed like a shiny road of escape, like an escape route. And then something really amazing happened. When I was 15 years old, I was watching a daytime television talk show by the name of Phil Donahue.
Mm-hmm.
And he had on famous female celebrity impersonators. And there's a beautiful performer, a live vocalist who sings live, does not lip sync, and is also one of the most famous Marilyn Monroe impersonators named Jimmy James. And Jimmy James now lives in Los Angeles, California. At the time, it was the 80s, and he came out on stage as Marilyn Monroe, and my jaw just hit the floor. I had never been exposed to something so self-created. All of a sudden, this idea of being an over-the-top personality, of being in show business somehow, all those little pieces of wanting to be fancy that I had when I was little kind of fell into my lap when he came out on the stage. And it was my first real exposure to drag queens, and I fell in love. And I decided right then that I was going to be one. That was met with a lot of, but you're a girl. You can't be a drag queen. You're a girl.
I was just going to say that, you know, as a biological female, and you wanted to be a drag queen, was it just that over-the-top costuming or makeup, or just the fact of that performing?
That was kind of the shiny candy coating that attracted me, but it was the inside of that existence that really appealed to me as well. I didn't feel empowered by being a woman. I grew up in a household where I didn't have any examples of really strong, over-the-top, happy women, not even happy women. I grew up in a very toxic childhood, a very unhealthy environment. Mm-hmm. And I just saw a lot of limitations around my gender. And I decided by the time I was 15 that I didn't feel comfortable being a woman. And that's where my gender story begins. I felt that it was similar to a scratchy hand-me-down sweater that my mom was trying to shove me into, instead of a choice. I didn't feel like I had chosen to be a woman. I felt like I'd been handed the fuzzy end of the lollipop. And so it wasn't just the wigs and the lashes, because then I could have just gone on to be an entertainer. It was really the idea that I could be the super fancy blonde lady that I dreamt of as a child, and that I could also escape from the gender identity of woman itself by becoming a drag queen.
What was the transgression into becoming the world-famous Bob today from there?
Well, when I was 15, I left home,
Yes. And
I was lucky enough to have been raised by a beautiful group of drag queens and gay new wave hairdressers and really, like, super fierce transsexuals. And I often say, you know, if nobody tells you what you are, you can be anything.
Yes.
And I was surrounded by people that really showed me how to stand in the face of little or no agreement, be true to myself. I was surrounded by people who are underdogs of society. So I learned a lot of my survival skills from them, and I also got permission from my queer family to pursue anything that I felt I was. And that's a freedom that made leaving home worth it. You know, the fear of being 15 years old and on my own was worth it because of the freedom that I was shown through my new family. And I moved, my travels eventually took me to New York City, where I wanted to live since I was 10 years old. I would daydream of New York City. I moved here when I was 24, and that was 1995, I believe. And I started working in the nightclubs right away. I was a nightclub personality, and that's when I got more engrossed in the drag community in New York City. And I was very quickly accepted, and I'll always be grateful for that. And that's why I'm always trying to reach out a new hand to artists that come to New York City to pay back the love and acceptance that I received when I came here.
That's an amazing story, isn't it? And the support that you had from your queer or chosen family that you that gave you that guidance at a young age to where you are today. And I think that just, says, just as I'm talking, I have to say I've just got just goosebumps thinking about that. Just thinking that it's just so wonderful that you had that support and love from the queer family you had to get you through those times to where you are today. It's just a beautiful story.
Thank you. I feel like they're why I'm alive, you know? Family isn't necessarily the people that brought you into this world. To me, the definition of family are the people that help you through it, not necessarily the ones that brought you into it. And if the two are the same, that's a blessing on its own. But for me, that wasn't the case. And I just feel like I'm constantly surrounded by, I owe everything to my family. My chosen family is who I owe everything to. And I feel like everyone's story is beautiful and important, no matter who they are. And I feel like it's the people that I surround myself with that make my story so interesting.
Absolutely. That's beautiful. Amy and Bob, would you stay on the line? We've just got to take a short break from messages. If you could stay on the line. Bob, when we come back, I'd like to talk to you about your burlesque career, if you'd be so kind.
Sure.
Thank you. We've just heard the first part of the interview that I did with the world famous Bob this morning and Amy Touchette. And if there's any part of that interview that you had any concerns with, or you feel you wish to talk to someone close, or contact the Gay Switchboard, or call Joy 94.9 for contact details.
Colin Armstrong on Joy 94.9.
Mark, thanks so much for your message, and who said he loves Bob. And also I heard from Jenny, and Jenny saying what an amazing woman, and it's all about family. So, look, thank you both for those fabulous messages. I would like to go into part two of my discussion and my conversation that I had with Amy Touchette, photographer, and one of the most amazing female burlesque performers, the world-famous Bob. You're on Joy 94.9. I'm Colin Armstrong and you're on Aesthetica. On the line from New York City this afternoon, I have the world famous Bob and I have also Amy Touchette. Prior to going for a message, we were talking to Bob about her career path and arriving in New York. Now, Bob is a burlesque performer, also lectures at New York University. And I would like to talk to you about, I mean, burlesque is, I've been to a number of burlesque shows over the years, and it really is they're amazing shows. And can I also say, Bob, that you bring mixing a martini into a whole new light.
Thank you.
And for anyone who's not quite sure on what I'm talking about, please go to the internet and search it, because it about mixing that martini, it's just amazing.
I will never look at a martini olive in the same way ever again. That's all I'm going to say.
So I can only serve them shaken. I don't do the stirring. You know that.
Exactly. Definitely shaken. Very well shaken.
So, Bob, tell me about where you're performing and the magic of burlesque.
Yeah, I accidentally stumbled across burlesque. Like, I have so many beautiful things in my lifetime. I started doing burlesque professionally 17 years ago. I can't believe it. I started when I was 9. Just kidding. a size 9. Just kidding again. And I was working in the gay clubs in New York City. I was working at Limelight and Tunnel and Club Pyramid. And it was just a really exciting time in the mid-90s. The club kid scene was still happening. And there was a lot of freshness for me coming from San Francisco, where I moved here from, to New York City. It was really exciting, and everything was just a little bigger and brighter here. And it was through working in the gay clubs as a nightclub personality that I started doing performance art. And my performance art was very 1980s rock and roll, AC/DC based. The act I was famous for was eating cheeseburgers. It was called Topless Aerobics While Eating Cheeseburgers in 6-inch Heels. I would do exactly that. Like, the title gave everything away.
Yeah.
And I would come with a bag of 100 McDonald's cheeseburgers and an exercise mat, and I would do it to AC/DC, and I would throw the cheeseburgers into the audience as if I were leading an aerobics class. And I had a lot of fun in the 90s in New York City. And then one day I went shopping for a new wig with Jackie Beat, who is my drag mother. And in the drag community, it's very common to, or it's desirable to have a drag mother, because they're someone who literally takes you under their wig, so to speak,
yes.
and really fulfills that mentorship. But it's more than that. It's an emotional need. We were speaking about the dynamic of the queer community needing to oftentimes recreate the family dynamic with chosen family. And a drag mother, for me, was a really essential part of what I was looking for. And Jackie Beat is the best drag mother I could ever have. And I encourage your listeners to look her up. She's very funny. She lives in Los Angeles now. She took me under her wig, and we went wig shopping, literally. And it was the first time I ever put on my Marilyn Monroe hair. And normally I had black, mohawk, very rock and roll, punk rock, Nina Hagen style. And I put on this blonde bombshell Marilyn Monroe wig, and my life just changed. I know it sounds ridiculous, but it really was a huge turning moment for me. And I thought, wow, I look like a 1950s movie star. Oh, I kind of look like Jimmy James. I mean, giving myself a huge compliment.
Yes.
So I went home and put together a Marilyn Monroe act. And I came back to the nightclub I was working at the time, and where I was doing all these rock and roll numbers, and all of a sudden I walked in like a 1950s movie star, and I mixed a martini in my cleavage. And I served it. I mixed a martini in my cleavage. I stripped down from my gown to a bikini. I shake it without using my hands. I pour it without using my hands. And then I retrieve olives from my panties and serve it to a lucky customer in the front row.
Yep.
And I had somebody in the audience. This was Jackie Beat's suggestion. I said, what am I going to do this week for the show? She said, well, why don't you mix a drink in your boobs? They're big enough. And I thought, that's a really great idea. So I did it, and I did it 50s style. And a patron at the bar walked up to me and said, I love your burlesque. And I said, what is that? This was 17 years ago. And, you know, it's a gay bar. He
looked
at me all sassy, like, go look it up. And he walked away. And so I did. I went to the library. I didn't have the internet or a computer. I went to the library, and I researched burlesque, and I fell in love. I couldn't believe what I was seeing, specifically the strip teasers, because burlesque did used to also include baggy pants comedians and different variety acts at some points in its past. But it was the headliners that really appealed to me, these over-the-top drag queens that were women that did topless performance art. I felt like I'd come full circle, that I'd actually found the roots to what I wanted to create in the future. And I've just been going strong ever since, and it's something that I still really love. And I welcome the influx of excitement towards it as an art form. I think it's created a lot of magic on stage. We're so inundated with reality TV and the harshness of reality, or the superficialness of something being presented as reality. There's so many people in jeans on TV. It's so boring.
Yes.
And I just am really excited that the pageantry and the magic of show business has returned with this beautiful thing called burlesque. And also that women are really powerful and in charge while they do it.
Yeah, and I think that shows in burlesque performing, doesn't it? That it's really great to see that engagement and powerfulness of a woman performing burlesque theatre. I think it's...
That's right. And, Bob, you were involved in Beth B's documentary Exposed as well, weren't you?
Yes, I'm going to Canada this month to present it during... the Calgary Underground Film Festival. It's been doing great. Beth B is a filmmaker that approached a handful of people in the New York City burlesque scene about 8 years ago, I would say, or 7 years ago, with this idea to make a documentary. And it has come to fruition. And it's a beautiful, heartwarming family portrait of people I love dearly. And the first time I saw it, I cried.
And just so you know, it is actually showing in Melbourne right at the moment at Nova in Carlton. And if people want to get along, they should actually go and have a look. I think it's still going this week. So make your way through to Nova Cinemas in Carlton and you can see Exposed with the world-famous Bob.
Your hands up, Melbourne's most uplifting station, Joy 94.9.
That was part of the interview with the world-famous Bob and Amy Touchette. We had quite a lengthy chat with them, and we've brought to you, and hopefully you enjoyed, the highlights of the interview. The interview was quite a long one, and it was such an amazing conversation. I just can't begin to... say that we just enjoyed it. Mark assisted me with the interview. It was really great this morning, wasn't it, Mark?
It was an amazing interview. She's a really amazing woman. Yeah. I would highly recommend going onto the web and looking at the pictures of the book, Shoot the Arrow, and they are amazing photographs. She's an amazing woman. Go and have a look at some of the film clips on the internet of her. Make sure you have a look at the one where she's making that martini. It is hilarious.
She's just and such a delight to talk to. So that was the world famous Bob and Amy Touchett.
This Joycast is a free service brought to you by Joy 94.9. Support Joy 94.9 by becoming a member at joy.org.au.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.